Your difference is our strength on Bristol's BCFM 93.2.
All fundamentalist religions are under attack. The Christian religion is under attack. The Islamic faith is under attack. Orthodox Judaism is under full-blown attack. Liberty is under attack. Patriotism is under attack. The Constitution is under attack. Anyone who believes in the Constitution is under attack.
Welcome back to BCFM's Politics Show with Old Abe Oxford economist Martin Summers and me, Tony Gosling. You weren't there, nobody I know was there, so does science really know how life started at the dawn of time? And what should or shouldn't we be telling our school children about it? Is science really unanimous? Is the theory of evolution now officially fact? As former Education Secretary Michael Gove forces creationism out of science lessons in free schools and academies, we have a debate on creation and evolution. Does it make sense to talk of creationism more as intelligent design? And has evolution really been proven beyond doubt? Is this just part of a wider problem, closing down debate in our schools and turning them into centres of indoctrination? Or have schools always been that under the influence of the church? Many people say they want their religious doctrines out of our schools, but is evolution really just another doctrine? Unlike the schools, we invite both sides to put their views and let you decide. We start with Martin Summers taking us on our weekly tour of the world's hotspots. Martin, we've had all sorts going on this week. We mentioned a little bit about Gaza in the first half of the programme and Israel. We also heard as well that the... Robert Fisk saying that what about American citizens and British citizens who are actually going out and fighting for the IDF? We've heard a lot on the news about people going and joining these jihadi groups, people like ISIS and those fighting in Syria. But what about British citizens fighting in the Israeli Defence Forces?
Well, I mean, Robert Fisk is obviously pointing out an inconsistency there in people's attitudes towards these things. I think that the Israelis in general get a very easy ride in the international community compared to other states. So, for example, when Serbia was doing very similar things in Kosovo to what they're doing in Gaza, not only did we cut off military aid to Serbia, we actually carried out a bombing campaign by the RAF and the USAF, which killed thousands of Serbians and forced them to disgorge Kosovo. That's not the sort of thing that happens to Israel, is it?
But the fact of the matter is, Israel is a democracy, and most of the Israelis are behind the Gaza war.
Well, that's but of course every Israeli citizen is in fact subsidised by the US taxpayer to the tune of several thousand dollars a year. It's not actually a viable state, in terms of the economy. And if the Americans wanted to stop them doing this, they could, but they don't because they've got an awful lot of political power inside the US.
Let's have your deep look at all this, though, because I was talking to Gerald Kaufman earlier in the week, former Labour shadow foreign secretary, and he was saying actually it all started really in the Six Day War, because the Israelis then permanently took over territory, what are now called the occupied territories, which actually weren't theirs.
Well, that's right. I mean, ultimately, the state of Israel has been recognised within the boundaries of 1948 by everybody, virtually everybody. But they've extended their rule over areas that they're not supposed to have, according to international law. Now, anybody else doing that, Serbia, or look at what's happening with the conflict between Russia and Ukraine at the minute, everybody screams and shouts and says it's not on. With the Israelis, they do it, and they carry on doing it for decades, and not only are they not punished, they're subsidised to the tune of several thousand dollars per inhabitant. So it's rather perverse. And of course, it's creating more trouble, lots of trouble, not just with Israel Palestine. It's creating an image of the West as being supporting colonialism and racism.
And is Gerald Kaufman right in saying that the only thing that will change anything in Israel, no other nation will stand up to the Israelis other than the United States, and the only thing that will change the Israeli attitudes is if the financial
ultimately the Israelis want to live a middle class lifestyle subsidised by the US taxpayer on somebody else's land, and the way to make them understand that the price for that is, the alternative is to fight them like Serbia. Thousands of civilians, they bombed the television station, do you remember, in Serbia, because they said it was telling lies. Maybe some, maybe there'll have to be some kind of airstrikes against them. And of course, when they attacked the USS Liberty in 1967, John Morrison's father, who's in command in the East Mediterranean, ordered an airstrike on Israel.
This is the singer from the Doors.
Which was countermanded by John McCain's father further up the chain of command. Ultimately, the Israelis have got to understand that war is war, and if they're going to try and the might is right argument, ultimately that means that they've got to they'll have to face full out war.
But there are
if you're going to kill civilians on the other side, you can't imagine that there's going to be that much weeping when your civilians.
But there are other big power blocks in the world, and at the United Nations, Martin, notably the Chinese and the Russians.
Well, that's right. The Israelis are making it more difficult, for example, for US and British forces on the ground in other parts of the Middle East and Central Asia to convince the local populations that they are not anti-Muslim, because the Israelis, who are our allies, clearly are. And at some point, that's actually putting the lives of British servicemen in danger.
Well, there's one news story this week. White House is slamming Israel for attacking the UN school. Many children killed there, and it was being used as a shelter. But the ammunition still keeps being passed on.
Well, that's right. The Israelis know that these people go through the motions of criticising them, but nothing is going to be done. Their pocket money is not going to be taken away. Serbia didn't just have its pocket money taken away; it was subjected to a 40-day barrage by aircraft and cruise missiles. And ultimately, perhaps that's the only thing that the Israelis will understand.
Winding back a few months, years actually, to Libya, and we hear this week that the Libyan Islamists have now declared control over Benghazi in the country. It's town versus town and faction versus faction. Those are the new realities in Libya. It's a becoming a failed state, isn't it?
Well, that's all of our interventions in the Middle East have created failed states. In Iraq, in Syria, and of course we have intervened in Syria, we've been supporting the rebels in Syria with military means and other means all along, and of course that means Roland Dumas, the former French foreign minister, was on television in France about 18 months ago saying before the Arab Spring he was approached by British officials at an international meeting, and they said, we are going to run an armed rebellion in Syria, do you want to participate? So it may very well be that MI6 and our own British government are in fact responsible for the war in Syria, not Assad, and that of course means that we indirectly are responsible for all the death and destruction that has ensued.
Well, Gaza and Libya are a little way apart.
We're certainly responsible for the death and destruction in Iraq.
Gaza and Libya are a little way apart, but in between is Egypt, and you mentioned briefly in the first hour the politics there really being fascinating, the way that the government was overthrown, democratically elected government after the Arab Spring.
Well, that's right, the democratically elected government was overthrown, and therefore it might be legitimate for Muslim Brotherhood supporters in Egypt to say, well, the only language these people understand is force. Assad's got to be forced out by force, Gaddafi was forced out by force, maybe the military in Egypt has got to be forced out by force, and then of course, just as in Libya, the RAF will bring in close support.
But it's not, completely the opposite.
No, of course it is.
It's being supported financially and politically.
Indeed, in other words, the West's intervention in the Middle East recently and over the decades has been a disgrace, an absolute disgrace. Millions have died as a result of our policies, and I'm afraid that you carry out things like that and you think that it's not going to come back and hit you. It will come back and hit you in the end. Of course it will.
Getting bigger by being better. The number one choice for Bristol. This is BCFM 93.2.
Well, meanwhile, over in the US, the CIA has admitted this week that it spied on the Senate Intelligence Panel. Martin, this is pretty incredible, isn't it? So it almost sounds to me a little bit like a kind of Watergate thing going on there, where the spooks are really obsessed with controlling the politicians, that they're actually keeping an eye on everything the politicians are up to. And this, I suppose, is that writ large, this whole business of surveillance and Snowden. The GCHQ and the National Security Agency are spying on ordinary people, but they're also taking a great deal of interest in what's going on with our politicians. So, I mean, that just sounds wrong to me. Why is it wrong?
Well, the obvious answer to that is that they're keeping tabs on everybody who is involved in politics so that they can make sure that they can steer them in the direction they want them to go. So, for example, if they collect dirt on various political figures, they can use that to blackmail them to support, for example, increased funding for the security services. This is always going to be a problem. Who will guard the guardians? If you're going to create a secret service, which is secret, there's always going to be a tendency for them to aggrandise powers to themselves, which they shouldn't have.
Is there anything to stop these kind of agencies, the signals intelligence people, military intelligence, from actually turning their attentions on domestic activists, domestic political groups, groups and politicians?
They already do. I mean, the Special Demonstration Squad in Britain, which has existed since 1968 and has hundreds of members, has infiltrated virtually every protest group in Britain, and to the extent of having relationships with members of these protest groups and giving them babies and then running off and leaving them to bring the children up without support. And that's been uncovered in Britain just by one squad of the Metropolitan Police. If that's what the Metropolitan Police are getting up to, have a think what everybody else is getting up to. CIA, MI5, MI6, etc.
We're getting back to the US Senate. So the articles by Jason Ditz yesterday, CIA admits it spied on the Senate Intelligence Panel. After long-standing denials, the CIA has finally admitted that its personnel improperly accessed computers belonging to the Senate Intelligence Committee to spy on the details of a report they were compiling on the CIA's use of torture. Improperly accessed in this case means illegally hacked, and Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democratic California, dubbed the spying as a violation of the understanding the committee had with the CIA, as well as a violation of constitutional rights. Other senators concur, with Saxby Chambliss, Republican Georgia, calling it a very serious matter, and several urging the ousting of CIA Director John Brennan. This is CIA Director John Brennan, who, if you remember, the investigative journalist Michael Hastings was investigating when he died in a very strange, fiery car crash where it appeared his car had actually been hacked, his Mercedes car, and driven at high speed into a tree. Brennan, who publicly denied that any such spying took place as recently as March, has now issued an apology to the committee for misleading them on the issue. Well, why is he still in his job, this CIA director?
Because they're incredibly powerful, and they've built up their power over many, many decades. Basically, these organisations shouldn't really exist, to be honest with you. The police force should be set into investigating what they get up to, because it's not just spying on people. They've probably been involved in assassination and certainly involved in torture. Ultimately, these are illegal structures which need to be dissolved.
But it's not illegal. The CIA is not illegal. It's set up
a lot of what they're doing is illegal. They were set up as a legal structure in the first place, but they've actually evaded that legal control. In Italy, Imposimato, who's the head of the Italian Supreme Court, wrote a book which came out 2 years ago, which I keep drawing people's attention to, La Repubblica dei Strani Impuni, The Republic of the Unpunished Massacres, based on decades of investigation by the Italian civilian police force, which was absolutely clear that SISMI, the Italian secret services, and the CIA were involved in bombings and killings in Italy, which killed hundreds of people in the 70s and the 80s and into the 90s. Basically, the NATO intelligence services are completely out of control. They've been out of control for a very long time, and they've been involved in all sorts of provocations in the Ukraine, which the Russian intelligence services are incredibly aware of. I'm afraid the hour is very late now. We've allowed these people to get to a position of great power and authority without actually understanding what they've been doing. They've actually been engaged in terrorism. And of course, it's well known, for example, that the MI6 were the lead agency on Operation Cyclone, which helped to set up Al-Qaeda in the 1980s to fight in Afghanistan. They trained and they recruited as many jihadis as they could from across the Middle East, many of them from Libya and Iraq, and they were all taken off to fight in Afghanistan, having been trained by people like the SAS. And that was all done by MI6, who were the lead agency during the Thatcher era. They've actually been creating terrorism and then saying, oh, look at these terrorists, we need some more money to stop them. It's a game that's been played for decades, and I'm afraid we're coming to the end of the line now, because these provocations are reaching the point where we could actually have a global conflagration as a result of this kind of activity.
Made in Bristol. This is BCFM 93.2.
Finally, Martin, Argentina. Big things going on in Argentina this week. A default. Well, you predicted possibly that this was going to send shockwaves right across the world. Doesn't seem like the world economy's collapsed yet. What's been happening in Argentina?
Well, what's been happening in Argentina is when they had an economic problem in 2000, they defaulted on their debts, and which nearly caused it was the proximate cause of the dot-com bubble bursting. And they basically did a deal with all of their creditors around the world, and they basically wrote off what they call a haircut, 70% of the debts that they were owed, on the basis that they would then get some interest payments paid. Now, small numbers of their creditors, like particularly Paul Singer in the US, bought up this debt for pennies on the dollar, and they've now got the US Supreme Court saying that 100% has to be repaid, even though most other creditors have written off the vast majority of the money. Now, this means, of course, that this has forced Argentina into a default. At the moment, it's not causing shockwaves around the world, because Argentina has not had access to the international credit markets for a long time. But of course, if the principle is established that vulture funds can get 100% of the debt that they claim to be owed, other countries will be in the firing line, and this will bring down the banking system.
All right, Martin, thanks very much for that. And we're going to be talking, after the jingle, we're going to be talking about creation and evolution.
Bristol Community FM is a registered charity, which means we're not for profit, and we're now able to support local business by offering low-cost promotional announcements and adverts about your business or products. You can even sponsor a show, event, or outside broadcast. So why not support the station that supports the communities of Bristol? And contact us today to find out more. BCFM 93.2 FM. Bristol is our community.
Yes, so anyway, is science really unanimous? Is the theory of evolution now officially a fact? The news has come in just last month that and this is from politics.co.uk, a secular triumph as the government bans creationism from free schools and academies. Creationism cannot be taught as a valid scientific theory in any free school or academy, the government said. The move, which came in a little notice document last week, marks a significant victory for secular campaigners who've long fought to ensure the freedom granted to free schools and academies does not allow religious ideas to be taught in science classes. New clauses for church academies published in June the 9th this year clarify the meaning of creationism and state it's a minority view within the Church of England and Catholic Church. It then adds the requirement on every academy and free school to provide a broad and balanced curriculum in any case prevents the teaching of creationism as evidence-based theory in any academy or free school. Well, is this right or is this wrong? In order to debate that, I'm joined by Anthony Bush, who's the director of Noah's Ark Zoo Farm, and also by the BCFM DJ, Steve Satan.
I was wondering how you're going to describe it.
Well, would you like to describe yourself in any other way?
I might say the resident Satanist, Steve Satan.
Resident Satanist. But anyway, what I thought we'd do is we start with a couple of minutes of both of you setting out your cases. And let's have you first, Anthony.
I'd like to know what Michael Gove means by creationism. Michael Gove is, of course, an atheist, and he therefore probably favours a secular worldview. However, the majority of people, I think, would use expressions like "he has gone to meet his maker," or "we will see them the other side," and assumes that the soul is continues to live after death. And so there is metaphysics as well as physics. But to hear lots of the secular people talk, you'd think that physics was all there is, and that, of course, I would strongly oppose, because I think that there is a superior being who has made us, and he is our creator, and that is undoubtedly evolution. There's lots and lots of evolution, maybe far more than some people on the evolution side would want us to believe, and I think it's much faster, and it's continuing today. But that's far from saying that evolution can produce everything out of nothing. I came down from Oxford the year that Richard Dawkins went up to read biology, and Stephen Hawking went up to read theoretical physics. I came down from reading maths, and it's on mathematical grounds that I disagree with them, because I know that naught plus naught equals naught, and they think naught plus naught equals everything. But I don't think you can get anything out of nothing, let alone everything. So I would strongly make a case that God is at the back of all of it. He's at the back of nature. He's at the back of the laws of nature. He's at the back of light and gravity and the atoms and all of life. And he's put life in place and caused it to evolve into what we have now.
Well, Bristol is at the centre of this in many ways, because largely because of the BBC Natural History Unit being based here, and many people around the world enjoy those programmes. There's obviously a lot of science goes in there as well. But anyway, let's hear from you, Steve Satan. What's your thoughts? Give you a couple of minutes to just set out your case as to why it's evolution and not creation.
Well, I'm interesting to see you talking about Gove. I'm not sure he is an atheist, actually. He's certainly an idiot. And actually, that recent pronouncement is actually one of the very, very few decent things he's actually done. The thing about creationism, where do we start, is it's garbage, it's nonsense, it's fiction, it's not based on evidence in any way at all. Now, Einstein said that all of science is nothing more than the refinement of everyday thinking. In other words, it's common sense with just a little bit of logic applied. Now, what creationists do is they have this blind, stupid faith in God, and they twist the evidence to match that blind faith, when it's so clearly nonsense. I mean, Noah's Ark could not have happened for so many millions of different reasons, and it's absolutely incredible that otherwise intelligent people actually seriously believe in it. Believe in fairy tales. You believe in fairy tales. And for that, I'm sorry, you're an idiot. You know, should creationism be taught in schools? Yes, it should. It should be taught in politics, and it should be taught in RE, because it has a political and a religious dimension. It doesn't have a scientific dimension. It's not science. Because the way science works is you have a hypothesis, you test it with evidence and see if it works or not. The way creationist so-called science works is you have your faith and you twist the evidence to meet that faith, and that is not science.
Okay, now, I can hear you champing at the bit over there, Anthony, but I want to pick up, Steve, on just one thing you said there about Noah's Ark.
Yeah.
Can you just explain why you think in so many ways Noah's Ark, because this is obviously, we've got Anthony from Noah's Ark Zoo Farm here.
Yeah.
This is a biggie for him, and I want to hear why you think Noah's Ark is so impossible.
About 10 million reasons. Right, where did the water flood away to? How could one man build a ship that is so huge it would have to be about 10 million times larger than an oil tanker? Where did he get the 1,000 different species of bats for, the millions and millions of different species of insects? How did he deliver them to all the different parts of the world? So the kangaroos went to Australia, the polar bears went to the North Pole, the Skomo vole went to the island of Skomo. What did the animals feed on both while they were on the ark? You know, it would have required millions and millions of man hours to require that word. When the animals landed on the earth again after the flood, every plant would have been dead. So what did they feed on? It just goes on and on and on.
Okay.
It's so ludicrous. It's nonsense.
Okay, we know you think that, but Anthony, would you like to answer some of that?
Yes. Noah's Ark has been looked for in the wrong place at the wrong time. And there was a time...
That's
when
it doesn't exist.
There was a time when the whole world was underwater. Every geologist knows it. It's called the Early Archaean. Now, you may not have even heard of it, but the Early Archaean was... If you date it radiometrically by the speed of radioactivity now, you dated it 4.4 to 3.9 billion years ago. However, if the speed of light was much faster than it is now, then that changes everything. You are dependent on the speed of light not being the same as gravity. I suspect that when light was invented, it was the same speed as gravity. And therefore, we're looking in a completely different place for it. But if you look at it in the early Archaean, you'll find that the early Earth history is missing. There's a gap. And there is no rock on the Earth's surface as old as the moon, for example. Now, the moon is in place, and it got hit by asteroids, 80 of them, and they would have to have hit the Earth, probably 20,000 of them, and that would have resurfaced the Earth. Now, the Earth was formed then, but the sort of gobbledygook reasoning of the ruling paradigm is that this is when the Earth was being formed. But come on, the moon was already formed, and it's hard, and there are 80 holes in it between 300 kilometres and 1,200 kilometres across, so it was there.
Okay, Anthony, one other thing that Steve's mentioned there was this whole business of how do you get all these animals into the ark and then spread them out all again all over the world?
But because Noah only needs to take about 500 in. They've involved since then. And there's plenty of room for them. And he lands on Pangaea. Come on. And having landed on the budding Earth as it comes out of the early Archaean, this is recolonization theory. We've been put it out there for 10 years, and it surprisingly had surprisingly little opposition. Well, one of those who think about it, but those who are informed.
One of the best points I think Anthony's made there is this whole business of the flood myth, which is actually in many, many different religions have it. And what Anthony's saying
every
is actually there is actually scientific evidence for the flood as well. Whether or not it seems to make sense nowadays, the evidence seems to be there.
No, it isn't. It isn't there. And there's at least four examples you've just given of the way you twist the evidence to meet your theory. Firstly, there's no evidence at all that the speed of light has changed. There's no evidence at all that the rate of decay of radioactivity has changed over the years. Pangaea split apart into the continents we know millions of years ago, and we know how the moon was formed because there was the very strong evidence points to it, the Earth being hit by a huge asteroid or huge smaller planet and splitting apart. There was another example as well. I can't remember what it was, but rapid evolution. You reckon there's rapid evolution in the last 2,000 or 10,000 years? The fossil evidence doesn't back that up. We know you can.
This is because
fossils is a good thing to bring up because that is where you'd expect to find the evidence for this, Anthony.
It is, and actually, if geologists were allowed to date the fossil record with the evidence of their eyes, which they're not, they would come to a completely different conclusion. I've actually brought along some pictures. You can't show them on radio, but I can show them to Steve if he's prepared to look at them. But there are actually places in the fossil record where a geologist is not allowed to date rocks.
How does an archaeologist date a rock with his eyes, Anthony? Surely it's much better to use some sort of scientific apparatus.
Well, take the Dover Cliffs, for example. They have got lines across about every 40 centimetres or so. And it's called cyclicity in Cretaceous chalk. And this is a repeat cycle going on and on and on over maybe 4,000 to 5,000 times. Now, the ruling paradigm is that there is a repetition of some astronomical feature every 20,000 years for 80 million years. Now, this is fanciful. As a mathematician, it doesn't add up. What astronomical cycle repeats itself every 20,000 years enough to make this Cretaceous rock look busy and then quiet, busy and then quiet, busy and quiet,
it's,
busy
it's
and
called
quiet?
Precession. Exactly. You surely understand that, the movement of the planets and so on is very, very predictable and very, very cyclic.
And there are something that's happening, Steve, under precession now. What change is happening? Any visible evidence for
your
precession?
It's very long-term. It probably as you said, it's, it's over many thousands of years.
Okay.
And it's probably related to climate.
Anthony, can you just explain this term precession? Because obviously this is something that people need to understand.
Steve is talking about Milankovitch cycles. There are actually three of them. Precession is one of them, which is the wobble on the pole. But the wobble on the pole is minute. And you can't detect anything happening because of it. And he knows that, and I know that. And obliquity of the ecliptic is another one. But nothing happens from it. You can't detect it as going on. And so it's complete fabrication that cyclicity should be caused by precession.
It's convenient. It's actually well known and well understood. And subtle changes in the planet, in the planet's movement and alignment, do affect the weather cycles. You're citing an example which I haven't had the opportunity to fully research. But the point is, there are several possible, reasonable explanations of any of these things. And I dare say, that there are scientists who have written up peer-reviewed papers who explain it all and reject your theory.
I've got pictures here, Steve, of hundreds of feet of the Dover Cliffs, which is Cretaceous chalk cyclicity. But there are other cyclicity in the Jurassic.
But okay,
and
so
you're not allowed to date these evidence of rise.
Who says you're not allowed to? This is nonsense.
Because you go to chemists to find out the the radioactive date of it.
Okay, yeah. This is a key thing in any of this. It's bound to be carbon dating.
It is.
Do you want to, maybe you first, Steve, is this reliable?
Yes, it is. It's a well-established science, as is any number of other sort of well-established scientific measures of dating rocks, such as uranium.
It is consistent. So, I agree. I agree completely that it's consistent, but it's consistently wrong in that it doesn't back it up by the other clock. There are two clocks. Radioactivity is one clock,
yeah.
And the evidence of your eyes is the other clock.
So you're talking about whereabouts the fossil is sitting in the...
I'm talking about the speed of build-up. Yeah. Take, for example, an area of the world where the whole fossil record exists together. There are 24 of them, and I've got four of them there. The Orman Interior Basin, for example, and the Tunisian Basin. Five kilometres of rock in a vertical wall, and everything's there. Now, there's 5 kilometres. If the creationist view, which I disagree with completely, is that built up under a one-year flood. That's impossible. That's 60 metres a day of sedimentation build-up. Now, that is completely wrong. But the other view is equally inane and stupid, because it means you've got 500 million years to go from the Cambrian to the Cretaceous, and it's builds up 5 kilometres of rock, which is 0.01 of a millimetre per year. Now, it's not in the nature of sedimentary rock to build up that slowly. It is pathetically slow.
That sounds quite reasonable to me.
Well, name somewhere in the world where it's building up that slowly.
You're picking on a specific example that obviously I can't research and come up with a counter-argument. No. The more general point is that the scientific evidence is there, it's available to all of us. And this idea that, you're being suppressed or something is nonsense. If you can prove existing science wrong, go for the Nobel Prize. Publish it in a peer-reviewed...
Okay, I will ask you, tell me one shred of evidence for the Big Bang being a scientific theory. Well, how does a singularity go bang? Under what science does a singularity go bang?
Well, we have the evidence of the aftershocks.
What do you mean by the aftershocks?
Well, okay, there's two very strong bits of evidence. Firstly, that the stars and the planets, the whole universe is expanding. And if you wind that backwards, do a little bit of history, well, it must have come from a single point. And secondly, there's the... There's the microwave background radiation, which you can still hear with the certain equipment.
Both those things have got completely different but quite reasonable explanations. But you still haven't told me how a singularity goes bang. It's under infinite gravity. Overcomes that infinite gravity?
What I'm expecting to hear you say is actually God pressed the button to make the Big Bang. But that is quite a good question, isn't it? How did the Big Bang happen?
He's got much more difficult questions to answer.
Because if you believe in that something must have caused it, which is kind of the background logic of creation, then you have to ask, well, what caused God? And there's no explanation for that at all. If you want to answer that particular question about where the Big Bang started, then you have to get into very, very complex physics, which the likes of Stephen Hawking are working on. And I can't explain.
They don't. Roger Penrose said the other day, he said, the understanding of the Big Bang is this, but it's a theory, and understanding is not a proven fact at all.
Misusing the word theory. A theory is a proven fact. You're talking about a hypothesis, aren't you? But it's not a hypothesis. It's well established and well agreed on in the scientific community. There's no disputing that the Big Bang happened.
You've got a further problem then. Having had a big bang, okay, you've got these quarks and antiquarks flowing out through the universe. Now I want to hear from you a scientific proposal of how an atom can form out of random quarks and antiquarks flowing through the air. Subatomic particles to an atom. It looks as though it's very precisely engineered in such a way that you can't break it apart without making a big bang on a few, quite a big explosion on a few. But otherwise, how can you make an atom? How can an atom ever form itself?
That's a question for the particle physicists, but I suspect if you read the Journal of Particle Physics, they have a pretty good explanation for that.
It's not a mystery. Steve, I admire your faith. It's wonderful that you've got faith in that sort of nothing theory.
It's not faith. No,
it's got to be theist.
No, it isn't. This is the fundamental difference.
Beyond science.
You're trying to catch me out on giving specific examples, and obviously I cannot reasonably have been expected to conduct every single possible scientific experiment that's been done. I'm just going to get to a really crucial point here, right? The point about science is I can go and check out any of it. I can't go and check out all of it, but I can go and check out any of it. And that's why it's not faith. It's evidence-based. You, on the other hand, stick doggedly to your faith, which has no evidence behind it.
You've failed on my first two questions to produce some science for the Big Bang and some science for how an atom could form. Yeah. Now, come again with the third. My third question is, how can atoms form into life?
Okay, Anthony, this is a crucial part of it all, because there's a great deal of difference between life and rocks flying around.
Absolutely.
This is Newton's second law of thermodynamics, is entropy, which means everything starts falling apart.
Yeah.
The amazing thing about life is, you know, even though we've been talking about some rather horrendous examples of it in the Holy Land at the moment, is that actually life it flows in the opposite direction. It sort of gathers energy together. It does something very, very different. So, Steve, maybe you could just give us your idea of how life really began. We're left with the Big Bang, we've got rocks everywhere, a few planets, the sun, all these various chemicals hanging around. How does life come from that?
Well, you know, I'm not an absolute expert, and I haven't studied every individual step of it in detail. But it's perfectly plausible at every level. You know, you've got an input of energy in the form of
where did it come from?
From the solar radiation.
Well, you've got ultraviolet light, for example.
This is long before the sun. Come on.
No, it's not. Well, you're talking about evolution of life on Earth, right? So you've got a planet which is formed from a clump of rocks.
So did you just say that life happened before the sun?
I'm asking how it came.
I think that's a fairly outrageous claim.
It may have happened in other
claim.
Universes, I don't know.
I think, far as we know, the sun was there before life started.
But it depends if you're Fred Hoyle. If you're Fred Hoyle, you think it came from somewhere else and it landed on the planet.
Yeah, I think that's nonsense. Well, it's not nonsense. It just shifts the problem
somewhere else.
Well, it may be the truth, though, you know.
But where does the energy get into the sun?
Just get back to this point, if you can, Steve, of how does life... I mean, it's a little bit counterintuitive that you've got rocks and matter and life comes out of that. There just seemed to be a little bit of a bit of magic. There needs to be a bit of magic to make something different happen.
There is some magic. And you can do computer simulations. You might have tried Conway's Game of Life, for instance, which you just put in random stuff and strange patterns start to evolve. You know, you've got a source of energy, you've got a primeval soup, you've got loads of chemicals floating around. It's perfectly reasonable that you're going to start to set something in motion once you do that. And again, you know, you can read the review of I don't know, the appropriate scientific journals, and you'll come up with the answer.
So, Anthony, we don't necessarily need God for life to form.
You do. You've got to have something outside of life to create life.
We've got the Big Bang.
We've got rocks.
God is outside of the need of being creation, because he doesn't consist of energy and matter and atoms and stuff.
He doesn't exist at all. QED. Yes.
Well, I've experienced him, I'm afraid, and I've been healed, and I'm constantly listening to him, and he answers my prayer, and Noah's Ark is there because of my inspiration from him.
Anthony, one of the interesting things you said was that you were debunking certain creationists. So what's your position? If there are different types of creationists, are you someone that would go along with this idea of intelligent design?
But I'm the only... My difference with other creationists is that we agree that God created, that he doesn't need a great long time. He will probably take slightly longer than the Big Bang. The Big Bang seems to create the direction of everything in a trillion trillionth of a second. And that is... Well, God takes longer than that. He takes 6 days to create it all. But if DNA is a language which we can read but God can speak... And that's how I would propose DNA came into the world, that God can speak it. And he is big enough. He's big enough to speak to 7 billion people at the same time. And I think you've got a little tiny God, Steve, who somehow you've shrunk him and said, no, you couldn't do it. But he's way beyond the universe.
If God existed, of course he could do it. But that's the convenient thing about God. You can invent anything you like for him. You know
the challenge for you, Steve, is to say one day, as you're walking down the street, say, God, if you're there, please will you convince me?
I've tried it with Christians. They don't.
I can't convince you because you're opposed to everything I say. Probably because I, a ring of somebody who put you off religion. Well, this isn't religion.
No,
this
no,
is
not
faith.
At all. You see, this is the interesting thing. See, okay. the thing that put me off my religion is my brain and my logic and my ability to think for myself. You know, because I went to like most Church of England schools when I was a kid, we were forced to sing hymns and, you know, and say prayers and stuff, and I just never believed it.
Do you know how complex your brain is, that which you are thinking and allowing, and God has allowed you to say he doesn't believe in it. your brain is processing your eyes. Your eyes have got 95 million light receptors in the back of them, processing energy, processing light into your
cerebral cortex.
Cerebral cortex. You've got a nose that's got hundreds of thousands of
hairs. Well, let's not go deeply into Steve's anatomy.
All this is going into Steve's brain in such a complex way, and he's saying, well, this random could do this out of nothing.
But yes, this is, because that's what the evidence
tells us. This is not just creation. You know, this is optimal creation.
Let's go now to one of the key things in this whole argument. It's got to be the fossil record. The fossils really will tell us what happened in the past. You go to them, you can see there were creatures. There must be, I would say, if the evolution side is true, you would expect to see, looking at fossils, changing creatures as they mutated into new other bigger creatures. Steve?
And you do. The fossil, you know, there's a big myth going around, it's been going around for years, that there's a missing link, you know, that there's a lack of intermediate forms. You can go to museums around the world, you can go dig up fossils yourself. They're all there. There's a very, very clear pattern of evolution from, you know, primeval slugs to human beings and, you know, and all animals in between, including guinea pigs.
I think you know that there are some guys who decided that, secular guys who don't believe in God, who decided there was so little evidence for it, they'd invent punctuated equilibrium. And because of the lack of intermediate stages, that suddenly these were huge leaps, and these were genetic leaps. And to me, as a mathematician, it's beyond belief that the novelty that is in so many creatures and was in the creatures back in the Cambrian could have come out of random nothing. And it looks as though all the creatures in the Cambrian, there are 26 phylum of life, all different, and they're animal life, and they're all different. There's no link between them. Mm-hmm. They just suddenly appear.
Well, no, they are linked. They're
completely different body plans.
When you say suddenly, you're actually talking still several million years, aren't you? It's not like
Under your clock.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's hold it right there again. Sorry, folks, because we're getting into some interesting stuff. But how old is the Earth, Steve? First,
Is it 4.6 billion years?
Anthony,
we haven't done the work on it. I can't. But it's certainly less than 200,000. But it doesn't need that. But if you do the work on the rocks and look at them and add up the age, which no one's allowed to do.
Yes, they are allowed to do it. You can do it for yourself.
Well, I have talked to geologists, and they do not do it.
They do it. They do not do it because they just think, oh, not this nutter
because
again. It's been comprehensively debunked. No, you're talking rubbish.
It's because then if you raise your head above the parapet, you don't get a job. Come on, you know the ruling paradigm. You know how it works. Steve, you know how it works. The establishment wants you to...
This whole thing is nonsense, right? Because let's go back to Darwin, right? You know, you're positing this huge conspiracy against religion, which doesn't make any sense at all on two levels. Firstly, you know, remember that Darwin was a Christian, and he was working and living in a world which is overwhelmingly believing in God, in the Western Christian God, you know. And yet against that sort of force or you know, popular belief, he came up with a theory of evolution, and gradually it's gone that way. And the reason it's gone that way against the sort of Christian conventional wisdom is because that's what the evidence tells us. The body of evidence is overwhelming.
It's not actually.
How has it come about?
Because the fossil record does not tell the story of origins. It tells the story, in my view, of recovery. Now, there's a big difference.
No, you haven't answered my question.
Can you just let him explain that, please?
I think it tells the story of recovery after a wipeout. And this is why there are comparatively few of us, and we are not prepared to put it on the world at the moment, because the one or two people who are working on it would get their funding completely taken away. I know you're cynical about this.
Well, I'll just explain to you why that's nonsense.
If they were known and who they were, because nobody wants the boat rocked at the moment.
Have you actually got any evidence that people who are scientists and do creationist work have been sacked just because of the fact that they're creationists?
Threatened with, yes. And they've got no outlet for their publication.
Who, where, I'm not going to
tell you. I can't tell you. They'll lose their jobs, won't they? But I will, probably next March.
No, you know, the science is always evolving or developing or refining itself, you know, and so if you can come up with, maybe just start with a tiny flaw in the fossil evidence and put that to the scientists.
Well, one of the most,
birds.
What about birds?
Let's have the thing about birds.
But
you never do want.
Go for it, Anthony. Be quiet a second, Steve.
We could have mankind. Mankind is easy to debunk because everyone. Here I've got a sequence of it here. Here we have from the beginning, 7 million years ago, we had Sahelanthropus. Okay, we got the little bones that have been discovered, and it looks completely man. It doesn't look ape at all. We then have Kadunu man, and that's 3.6 million years ago. He looks completely man. And then we have the Laetoli footprints, which are completely man. And we have Lucy, who looks completely man. But then we have Australopithecus, Gahi. Now that looks like a slightly upright ape. But we've got man long before it, by millions of years.
I'm afraid, Anthony, you seem to be almost disproving your own theory by saying that there is this kind of different man and the apes have sort of have come
no,
from.
Man's always been there.
Always,
yeah. From 7 million years ago, the first appearance of a so-called ape man was man, and later came somebody who they described as ape man. But I think all of those, they're human. They're looking. You can see them in supermarkets around the world.
Okay, Steve. There is also one of the things which does look really dodgy around this whole business of mankind and apes and things is the hoax of the Piltdown Man, called Britain's Greatest Hoax. This is on December 1912. There was this massive sensation that someone had found a skull which was half man and half ape, and it later proved to be. Hoax, but it convinced people massively for something like 40 years.
Yeah, but there's no doubt it was hoax. But, you know, to coin the old phrase, one bad apple don't spoil the whole bunch. And just because one scientist committed a fraud, and it's totally accepted it was a fraud, that doesn't devalue the whole of science.
I tell you why it does, Steve. I was at school in the 1940s and 50s, and during that time, we used to laugh our heads off at the thought of apes becoming man. Mm. Where is the evidence? You can't climb out of a tree and expect to walk upright because you haven't got the feet to do it. You haven't got the spine to do it. You can't expect to successfully hunt meat and grow bigger brains. The whole story was a nonsense until Piltdown.
No, that's not true.
Piltdown went to every museum in the world. And so all of us were silenced by Piltdown.
And
by the time Piltdown was debunked, it was such a strong theory in some very loud people like you that you prefer intimidation and swamping people with to the science, because I've produced some science for you and you haven't been able to answer.
Okay, the reason I haven't is because, as I explained earlier, I can't possibly be prepared with every single conceivable scientific argument. If I went away and researched it, I would come back with answers to every one of your
questions. Okay, guys, can I just bring us up?
That's why we have to talk in more general points. Okay. Can I put another general point?
Very quickly, please.
Okay, look, what possible motivation would a scientist have to deliberately lie about creationism? Because if creationism is true, God exists. And if God exists, I have the chance of going to heaven or hell, and I'm more likely to go to hell if I lie about his existence. It's in my interest as a scientist, if God is true, to promote the creationist
angle. Quickly, Anthony, quickly.
There are lots of scientists who are Christians, and they are working in their different fields of science, and some of them believe that God made the world a long, long time ago. And but they, all of them, would say that you need a first cause, and that most of them, like the Roman Catholic Church, espouse Big Bang Theory a long time ago because they thought that God was the answer.
I'd like to bring this up to date a little bit because we've heard this week some pretty, I mean, for me anyway, pretty shocking stuff about what are effectively designer babies. This is an article in this week's Independent from Steve Connor, the science editor. The government's been accused of misleading the public over the introduction of a new in vitro fertilisation technique that some experts believe will result in the birth of genetically modified babies. Leading scientists, including Lord Winston, an early pioneer of fertility treatment, have criticised the Department of Health for trying to play down a process that will, for the first time, allow the alteration of the DNA of future generations. Now, I know it's a little bit of a curveball from the creation and evolution, but I mean, if you're into evolution, then actually the idea of a designer baby should be perfectly normal.
It's not, because it's not evolution by natural selection, is it? It's evolution by artificial selection. I mean, it's more, I think it's actually more of a sort of sociological dilemma, really, you know, about whether we should allow people to sort of pick their children. And it has, you know, huge implications for those countries where male babies are hugely favoured. So, you know, like I say, it's not really an evolution versus creation debate, I think.
Steve has, by sleight of mouth, suggested that natural selection drives evolution. It doesn't. Natural selection selects. Something else drives evolution. It's in the genome somehow. Now, there's a pathetically little possibility, like mutations and viruses producing all the novelty that changes everything from a butterfly to an elephant.
It did.
Come on, it's ridiculous.
Anthony, what's your view on this story this week? Because for me, I find it, I mean, you know, almost whichever side of the fence you're on, this seems to be rather shocking, the idea that it's eugenics, isn't it? We're going back to Francis Galton and the 1920s, and the idea that, you know, it's up to you to actually create beings. We've also heard this week, I think it's actually in today's Independent, which seems to be quite good on these sort of projects and science, is that they're talking about a transparent mouse which has been designed with see-through organs. That's just today. Heather Saul in the Independent, scientists have created a see-through mouse complete with transparent organs in a new technique that could pave the way to a new generation of therapies for conditions ranging from autism to chronic pain.
Well, actually, Tony, I don't think I'd write it all off in ways that some people would. I'm a farmer. I've been a farmer for 53 years, and I've seen genetic modification feed the world. And we wouldn't have done. We wouldn't be feeding the world if it wasn't for genetic modification. So I think there is room for it, but there needs to be lots and lots of safeguards, particularly when you get to humans, because you could create monsters and then feel they were sacrosanct and you couldn't destroy them. And so we've got a big deal about humans, but over most of animal life and most plant life, we need to have proper safeguards and
But I mean, aren't humans just animals, really? Advanced animals?
I don't think so. No, I think they're created in God's image. And that we have... But he doesn't look like my ape. I've got an ape, and I promise you, he's very different.
Yeah, but
lots of things that, about Steve that he may be more irritating.
Yeah, but what will be remarkably similar is our DNA, and the DNA record does prove.
No, come on, out with it then. Tell me the numbers.
We're all very closely related.
Give me the numbers.
They don't. What do you mean the numbers? It's something like 95 or 98%.
Yeah, that's what's produced. It depends what you go on. If you go on the coded for protein bits, but actually, most of the DNA, 99% of it, does not code for protein. And this is where evolution is, and I think God put it in...
You're talking about junk DNA, aren't you?
What you call junk DNA, I would have far more respect for it for that, because it's made the difference between you and me, for example. And it's what was on the genome that wasn't coded for protein. Because coding for protein, we're pretty much identical. But what isn't there...
Well, okay. Even if it is the bits that's coded for protein, that's a pretty remarkable coincidence, isn't it? You know, that pretty much still points to evolution, doesn't it?
Okay, you've got 50% the same DNA as a banana.
Yeah, okay. Well, we're related.
Well, you may wish you
and
were.
And so are you.
Dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs. I've got this little theory that dinosaurs are still around. The Loch Ness Monster is a dinosaur.
I've got a dinosaur on my farm. It's called an ostrich. It's the last of the dinosaurs.
Yeah, you're right. I agree with you. Birds are basically small dinosaurs.
Do you think man coexisted with dinosaurs?
The ostrich is. Well, no, birds in general. Chickens are dinosaurs.
Steve, did man ever coexist with dinosaurs at the same time?
Never. And the fossil record doesn't back that up in any way at all. There's the dinosaurs all died out under the KT boundary, and you'll find mammals evolved a lot later than that.
No, they didn't. Mammals were alive before the KT boundary.
But surely an ostrich is not a reptile.
It's a bird.
An ostrich is a it's a bird, but it's
not a Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is quite a lot.
There are some dinosaurs that had feathers on, and it may be that the ostrich comes out of that. But it's completely different from other birds.
So where have all the dinosaurs gone?
They died.
The dinosaurs, they all died out.
What do you think, Anthony, about mankind coexisting with them?
I don't think they all died out at the KT boundary, actually, because I think there has been some sighting.
All the big ones did, I think.
The very big ones, but there have been plesiosaurs and other sightings of stuff which looks quite like plesiosaurs.
Well, there's been some news this week about dinosaurs, apparently. again, this is from The Independent on Monday. Extinction of dinosaurs was terrible bad luck. If the asteroid strike that wiped out the dinosaurs had taken place, that's put there as a fact. I'm not sure if we really know an asteroid strike killed all the dinosaurs. If it had taken place just a few million years earlier or later, then the Earth might have ended up as a dinosaur-only zone, according to New Research. A study of the events leading up to the prehistoric creature's demise suggests timing of the impact was a colossal bad luck, hitting the dinosaurs just when their food chain had been seriously weakened by environmental upheaval. Do you buy that, either of you?
Probably.
I don't believe in luck. I think that God is looking after everything. Every bit of weather, every bit of asteroid, every bit of all of it. He has plans, and he has people in mind to...
How do you explain terrible suffering? You know, for example, the Great Plague. For example, what's happening now in the Holy Land?
I can't justify it. I can explain that everybody goes to ultimately meet their maker, and some go prematurely, and some last to a great old age. I don't deserve to last to 76, which I am, but other people go at one. Two.
Okay. And well, we're coming up now to the Murdoch News at 7, so I'd just like to give you each half a minute or so to sum up your views of what you think are the strongest arguments for your cause. So we'll start with you, Steve.
Can I just pick up a bit of news also appeared in the news this week, actually, which is very relevant here. It shows that basically religion rots your brain. Those people who are brought up in a religious environment are less able to think critically. So that's really all I have to say. Religion rots your brain.
Thank you, Steve. Now, Anthony, can you not react to that and just give us your views, what you think the most credible arguments are that people should research if they want to look at creation.
Steve and you, Tony, are two of the most credible arguments for creation, because you are both miraculous creatures, and you're full of, the more you look at you, the more you look at your skin, your eyes, your ears, everything, you are amazing. And you haven't happened this, you're not the product of random by chance.
What about arguments, actual arguments though, for creation?
There aren't any.
Argument for creation.
Yes.
Yes.
You think the strongest are that people should research?
Yes, and that we are God designed, and he put the DNA in there, put the DNA together in a limited number of things, and said, evolve.
Okay, Anthony Bush from Noah's Ark Zoo Farm and Steve Satan from BCFM here. Thanks very much for joining us. Time to sign off now for the Murdoch News at 7. Thanks very much to our guest in the first hour, Councillor for Knowle, leader of the Lib Dem group on Bristol City Council, Gary Hopkins. See you next week. We're online at thisweek.org.uk, and don't let the banksters get you down.
BCFM is an award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour, live from the Sky News Centre.
From the Sky News Centre at 7, a plan for a 3-day break in the violence in Gaza ended almost as soon as it began, with both sides blaming each other for the collapse of the temporary truce. Israel says one of its soldiers has been kidnapped, and the British Foreign Office is investigating whether he has links to the UK. Health officials in the territory say at least 50 people have been killed during Israeli shelling. Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond says he's disturbed by the news.
It is obviously extremely depressing that this ceasefire that we've all worked so hard to get broke down so quickly, as is the kidnapping of the Israeli soldier, which will make it all the more difficult to re-establish a ceasefire.
There's a stark warning that the Ebola outbreak is spreading too quickly for health experts to keep it under control. The World Health Organization has been meeting to discuss the epidemic. A £300 million project is underway to